بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الرحمن علم القرآن، خلق الإنسان، علمه البيان، الشمس والقمر بحسبان، والنجم والشجر يسجدان، والسماء رفعها ووضع الميزان، ألا تطغوا في الميزان، وأقيموا الوزن بالقسط ولا تخسروا الميزان، والأرض وضعها للأنام، فيها فاكهة والنخل ذات الأكمام، والحب ذو العصف والريحان، فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان؟ خلق الإنسان من صلصال كالفخار، وخلق الجان من مارج من نار، فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان؟ رب المشرقين ورب المغربين، فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان؟ مرج البحرين يلتقيان، بينهما برزخ لا يبغيان، فبأي آلاء ربكما تكذبان؟ صدق الله العلي العظيم. صلوات الله.
Requested for all of your marhumin and marhumat, all of the marhumin and marhumat, all the shuhada of Islam. الحمد لله رب العالمين، لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى
وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Brothers and sisters, it's the month of Ramadan, it's the month of Quran. The topic that, inshallah, I've chosen to deliver a series of talks on has to do with the Quran and one of the topics of the Quran. In hadith, we're told that whenever somebody spends time with the Quran, they gain something and they lose something. Whenever somebody spends some time with the Quran, they gain something and they lose something. They lose some of their spiritual blindness and they gain some of their spiritual guidance. And in this month, when we're spending time with the Quran, inshallah we're getting a lot of reward even for one ayah of the Quran. But the question is, how much guidance are we getting from it? And how can we get guided from the Quran? Month of Ramadan is an opportunity for us to become better, for us to become purer, for us to help others, our family members, our community become better. How can we use the Quran to become better and to help other people become better? So for that reason, I've chosen the topic of what is known as Ulul Albab. This is a term, for those of you who are familiar, you're reading the Quran, you've come across this term before, Ulul Albab. Because Allah Ta'ala mentions it somewhat frequently in the Quran. Who are Ulul Albab? They are the people who possess the pure intellects. Now sometimes when we come to these type of terminology and we come to these type of terms, people are like, whoa, okay, you're describing something which is like, that's really like high level, right? That's like for the elite believers, right? Possessors of pure intellects. I'm just a normal average Joe Mu'min, right? This type of thing for possessors of intellects, whatever, that's too high level for me, right? I want to tell me about stuff that's for my level. But I want to say here that Ulul Albab is something which is, again, Allah mentions it frequently in the Quran, and in many verses He says, وَمَا يَتَذَكَّرُ إِلَّا أُولُو الْأَلْبَابِ. He says that everything that the Quran mentions, it's only going to be noticed and be acted upon by this group of people, Ulul Albab. Meaning that there's a lot of people who read the Quran, open it, they go through it, maybe they memorize it, they recite it beautifully, they read it. But those who actually take from the Quran are the people who are known as Ulul Albab, the people of the pure intellects. Now, what's interesting is that when we go through the Quran, we see that Allah doesn't just say that, oh, by the way, you should FYI, there's a group of people who are Ulul Albab. Allah describes the characteristics of this group of people. What kind of people are they? Right? Who makes it into that group? And beyond that, Allah describes how we can take the path of becoming the people of possessors of pure intellect. So there's a whole path of guidance in the Quran for who they are, what's their characteristics, and how to achieve and attain that status of possessing a pure intellect. So it's a very interesting and fruitful discussion. When I'm looking around the room, I see many people who are parents or are future parents or grandparents, and they're involved in one capacity or another in helping others develop and flourish. And this discussion of Ulul Albab is super important. Why? Because when we're trying to understand, well, what is my goal in terms of raising my child? When will I know when, you know, I've done my job, or when is it that they've attained success? This is one of those key criteria that's mentioned in the Quran. That if you can raise a child to have an intellect which is a pure intellect, then you've done a good job. So this is a key thing. And inshallah, throughout the course of our discussion, I'll be mentioning some examples of what that means. But for tonight, I wanted to explain this concept a little bit more, because there's a lot of different takeaways that each one of us could come up with from this term. You know, if I were to ask this room and say, well, what does it mean to possess a pure intellect, right? Somebody might say that, well, it means that you could, for example, quote from, you know, I don't know, a whole bunch of literary sources because you're a very well-read person. Somebody else might say that you should be able to, like, reason super logically and defeat any argument that comes your way and prove your points. And somebody else might say something else. So it's very important and instrumental for us to understand what's meant by this concept. So when we go to the concept of intellect in Islamic sources, intellect doesn't mean just any idea that something to do with the mind or thinking or rational. There's a very specific meaning of intellect. Okay, what does intellect mean? Or aql or lub? Because ulul albab, the word in Arabic, albab, is the plural of the word lub. So ulul albab, ulu means possessing. So the word lub or the word aql, they refer to intellect. And there's some differences, but I don't want to get into that right now. An intellect is something that helps us to understand reality and determine the best course of action. So there's two components. One of them is understanding what's right, what's the truth, and distinguishing that from what's false and what's wrong. And number two is being able to figure out what to do in every course of action. And this concept of having that ability to understand the truth and to be able to act on it and decide what to do is something which is very highly praised in the Quran and in the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt. And I'm going to give a couple of examples because they will really help us, inshallah, to understand this concept in a deeper way. So there's one hadith narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam where he says that one time Jibreel alayhi salam came to Nabi Adam. And Nabi Adam, this is in Al-Kafi, and Nabi Adam, he says to him, Adam, I have been commanded to offer you the choice of one of three traits. You get to choose, right? You only get one of them, but all three of them are at your disposal. What are those? Nabi Adam asked him, and Jibreel answered, they are, number one, intellect, number two, decency, and number three, devotion. Now, what does that word mean, intellect, decency, and devotion? Intellect is the ability to recognize the truth and then make choices according to that. Decency is what? Decency or haya, right? Let's think about it in a broader sense. Decency, if you think about what does it mean to be a decent person, it means that whenever you have the possibility of falling into something bad or evil, you stay away from it. Right, you recoil from the idea of doing something bad or something which is evil. That's decency. And devotion is when there's something which is good or you think that it's good, right? You go for it. Okay, now just if I know that some people in this room are readers and they like to study and they want to get deeper knowledge of Islam. So I wanted to just take a moment here to mention a book which is known as the commentary on Al-Kafi, the book of intellect and foolishness. And it is by the Islamic Text Institute and authored by Sheikh Rizwan Arastu and a group of scholars. It's an excellent resource, and if you're interested in this topic, you can refer to that. Anyhow, Nabi Adam alayhi salam is presented with this choice, and Nabi Adam says that I choose the intellect. And then Jibreel says to decency and devotion, he says, go away, because Nabi Adam has chosen the intellect. But Allah orders and says to them, and they say to Jibreel, Jibreel, we've been ordered to remain with the intellect wherever the intellect is. Okay, meaning what? Meaning that, let's talk about practical examples here. Okay, there are times when there are people who are devoted to something. Okay, But because they don't have a strong intellect, their devotion actually leads them down the wrong path. Right? We have examples of this. For example, let's say I have a friend and I'm really devoted to my friend and I consider my friend to be pure goodness. And I'm devoted to them to the point where my friendship actually deviates me from the path of Allah. It happens. Right? So sometimes our devotion to something which we consider to be good can be a source of deviation for us. But if we have intellect, we say that, okay, well, is my friend a source of goodness in all cases? Right? Or is there a possibility that my friend can also be a source of deviance for me? And I'm always analyzing that with my intellect, and I understand at a certain point that what I think to be good is not good for me. It's actually bad. Okay, and there's other examples as well, where devotion can cause misguidance to somebody. Now when it comes to decency is staying away from what's bad, right? Maybe I think that something is bad, but it's not actually bad, right? And because my intellect is weak, I haven't been able to understand that. I'm stuck. And it happens all the time, right? Where I've been raised with a certain cultural understanding of what's right and what's wrong. And I haven't thought about it. I haven't thought about why I've kind of boxed this off and said, this is no man's land for me. Right? But then if I were to ponder upon it, I'd realize that, look, this is false. I've created some false barriers around this thing. And it happens. Right? There are some people who, maybe when it comes to certain religious practices, right? When it comes to certain types of ibadah, when it comes to certain wajibat, they're like, I'm there 90%, but this 10%, I can't do that. Why? Because culturally, that's not what we do. Okay, well, that's not what we do, meaning what, right? Is that Islam or is that something coming from something else? Right? So this hadith is a beautiful hadith, right? It tells us something very strong. It's kind of like, that thing of like where, you ask a kid, you say that, okay, well, if you had any wish in this world, then what would you wish, right? And if once the child, is smart enough, they say that I would wish to have an infinite number of wishes, right? So then it's like, okay, well, I can get anything taken care of, right? So here it's like the intellect is that thing where once you get that, then you get everything else as well, right? Being decent and being devoted is a very good thing, but only when it's coupled with the intellect. So that's one example. Please recite salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. In another hadith, the Imam alayhi salam tells us that when somebody has an intellect, the sleep of one who employs his intellect is better than a fool's vigil. What does that mean? It means that there can be somebody who is staying up the nights, for example, and they're worshiping Allah, and they're engaging in the night prayer, but they're not doing it with an intellect. And there's somebody else who is sleeping at night, and they're doing it with the intellect, and in Allah's eyes, that person is better, even though the other person is like taking so much trouble to, like, let's say, engage in the night ibadah and all that. Now, of course, right, we learned about the night ibadah from the imams, alayhim as-salam, and they themselves used to obviously, spend a portion of the night in conversation with Allah. That was their anchor, and they used to love it, right? And something which is very beautiful. But what the imams are encouraging us to think about is that ibadah is something which needs to be looked at in the greater context. Sometimes somebody's choice of ibadah, at times there's a need to supersede that with something else. My mom is calling me, for example, and she needs something from me, and I'm doing my mustahab prayer, right? I'm supposed to break my prayer and attend to the need of my mother. That's my responsibility at that time, right? It's very important. My family, let's say I'm a masjid regular goer, right? I'm there in the front row every single night, right? I'm a fixed part of, the masjid culture. But as a result of that, I never have any family time, right? I haven't had a single iftar at home with my family. And the month of Ramadan, which is meant to be a time of strengthening our bonds and creating blessings for our family and our homes, Right? We lose out on that opportunity. Maybe I need to rethink and say that, use my aql, right? And say that, okay, well, this is good, but this is better. Sometimes I can show up late for the center, or I can maybe even skip the center program. Maybe, I don't know, right? I need to think about it and really determine what is the best course of action. And the Imam al-Islam continues. He says that the one who employs his intellect to remain homebound and sedentary is better than the journeying of a fool in God's service. Okay, now this is super interesting here. The Imam al-Islam is saying that there might be somebody who has an opportunity to go traveling. Maybe they need to earn a living, right? So they have a great job opportunity that opens up, and they have to live, you know, they have to commute, they have to live, let's say, you know, at a distance from their family, but it's going to bring in like huge cash and whatever, everything's all set up, right? So there might be somebody who says that, okay, well, I'm going to jump on this, right? It's an opportunity of a lifetime. And somebody else says that, you know, I'm using my intellect here, I'm weighing my options, and even though I see an opportunity to gain financially from making this choice, I see that the overall effect on, let's say, my family and my faith, right, is going to be something which does not justify me taking that offer. Now, sometimes, you know, this question comes up that, you know, tell us the practical teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Now, what is more practical than this? Right? Like, imagine that there, to this level, the Imams are giving us examples of, like, traveling versus staying home, of staying awake in vigil at night versus sleeping. And of course, these are symbols, right? It doesn't mean that this is the only example. There's so many other times where we're making choices, right? I can work those extra 2 hours and, you know, let's say climb up the ladder twice as fast. Or I can take it a little bit slower, do my thing, right? But avoid becoming, what do they say, a wage slave? I'm going to become, I'm going to, you know, reject slavery. I don't want to become a slave. And I'm going to spend those 2 hours with my home and bonding with my children and my family. Right? These are things that we need to think about. Right? Sometimes children, when they open up about their wishes, right, they say that I only wish that for example, my father could spend some more time with me. Right? This is when they're young, right? And when they get a little bit older, then they won't wish that anymore because that hope has now been destroyed. And they go looking elsewhere for that comfort and that company. Right? And that's when the problems begin. So we're making choices all the time. Right? We're making choices all the time. And the person of the intellect is one who's able to measure the different options that are presented to them and be searching for that right choice. And this is something that Allah Ta'ala gives them. Why am I saying this? Because I'm enticing you, right? This is the beginning of my series here. I'm trying to throw out like some candy here, right? Trying to make it interesting. Like this is something which we need to know, right? It's intriguing. It's intriguing that somebody can be given that type of power to be able to discern and understand the truth and what's right and what's wrong. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, I don't want to extend our discussion too long. I'm just going to be moving towards the last portion of my talk for tonight. And then, of course, inshallah, with the help of Allah, I want to continue. But I want to narrate a very interesting incident that took place in Islamic history that's narrated in our books of hadith, which relates to this topic of intellect. And it's going to help us to understand more. So we have an ayah in the Quran, which is from Surah Ali Imran, which I want to mention here at this point right here. And, you know, I know that some people maybe aren't so familiar with like the ayahs of the Quran. They haven't memorized them and it's hard for them to follow. So just an idea that if you go to lectures like this where it's centered around the Quran, it's a good idea to have your own Quran with you or to have your app, your favorite app that you're pulling up and you're trying to see and note. It's amazing how sometimes Allah makes it in a way where, you know, we listen to a lecture and 10 years later, we don't remember anything that person said, but we remember that ayah. Right? The ayah sticks with us. Right? So this is something that I just want to encourage everyone. This is from Surah Ali Imran, ayah number 7. Allah says, أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ هُوَ الَّذِي أَنزَلَ عَلَيْكَ الْكِتَابَ مِنْهُ آيَاتٌ مُحْكَمَاتٌ هُنَّ أُمُّ الْكِتَابِ وَأُخَرَ
وأخر متشابهات فأما الذين في قلوبهم زيغ فيتبعون ما تشابه منه ابتغاء الفتنة وابتغاء تأويله وما يعلم تأويله إلا الله والراسخون في العلم يقولون آمنا به كل من عند ربنا وما يذكر إلا أولو الألباب. صدق الله العلي العظيم. Allah, in this ayah, this is one of those really key ayahs of the Quran. Like if you're trying to understand how to approach the book of Allah, this is one of those ayahs you have to read. You have to study, you have to understand. Allah says that He is the one who has sent down to you this book. But the ayahs of this book fall into one of two categories. Either they are the ayatun muhkamat, they are the definitive verses. Meaning what? Meaning that the meaning, according to the great Mufassirin, the meaning of the ayah is very clear. Right? If you read it and you have a good understanding of Arabic language and you're trying to understand the truth, you will get the understanding of it. Okay? Of course, it doesn't mean that simple meaning. The Quran has layers and layers of depth, but the meaning is something that you can derive. And then there are other ayat in the Quran which are metaphorical. Right? They have different meanings that you could take from them. You have to approach them carefully. You can't just come with it and say that, oh, this is what it means and for sure, and I got it, I'm going to move on. No, you have to approach them very carefully, right? There's a technique for understanding it, but you have to go about the right procedures. Then Allah says that as for those in whose hearts is deviance, they have corrupted hearts, they pursue what is metaphorical in it, courting temptation and seeking its interpretation. But no one knows the interpretation except Allah, and those firmly grounded in knowledge, they say, we believe in it, all of it is from our Lord, and no one takes reminders except those who possess intellect. So the last part of this ayah has to do with our topic. It talks about ulul albab. Now the hadith says the following. It's from one of the companions named Yunus ibn Dabyan, and he's talking to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. He says that, O Imam, I went to this gathering, and it was a gathering where the head person was Imam Malik, you know, the one who the Ahlul Sunnah consider to be an Imam, right? They're one of the four Imams, Imam Malik ibn Anas. So he says that Malik was there with his followers. And I was there, I just wanted to, you know, see what it was like. I was hearing their conversations. So he tells the Imam that I was shocked by what I heard. I heard that some of them were saying that Allah has a face just like human beings have faces. Right? Why do they say that? Because the Quran talks about wajhullah. فَأَيْنَمَا تُوَلُّوا فَثَمَّ وَجْهُ اللَّهِ in Surah Baqarah. Right? Wherever you turn, there is the wajh, the face of Allah. So you're saying that these people are saying that Allah has a face just like the faces. And there are others who say that Allah has two hands just like everyone else has two hands. Right? Why? Because the Quran says, quoting Allah, that when Allah is talking to Shaytan, that say salawat, please. He says, "Ya Iblis, ma mana'aka an tasjuda lima khalaqtu biyaday astakbarta am kunta min al-'aliin," in Surah Sad, that, O Iblis, right? Why are you refusing to prostrate, to do sajda to the one I created with my own two hands? Right? Quoting from the Quran here. So he's saying that some people are saying that Allah has a face. Some people are saying that Allah has two hands. When the Imam hears this, the hadith is very interesting. The hadith says the Imam was, somehow he was in a relaxing position, but he sat straight up. Straight up. And he's like alarmed by what he hears. And he says, Allahumma afwaka, afwaka, O Allah, we seek your pardon, we seek your pardon. And then the Imam alayhi salam starts to explain it. He says that if somebody says that, they've done shirk with Allah. If somebody has said that Allah has limbs and organs, then they have done kufr of Allah. Meaning that they're believing in Allah, which is not Allah, right? And he says Allah is exalted beyond what they claim. And then he goes on to explain. He says that the wajh of Allah, meaning that if you want to find Allah, right? When you want to identify somebody, you look for their face. Correct? Right? Why is it that, you know, facial ID is so important? Because the face is what's unique, right? The face is what represents. So when you want to find someone, you look for the face. And he says, if you want to find Allah, the face of Allah is in the prophets of Allah and in the awliya of Allah. That's where you find Allah. They've taken the wrong meaning altogether. And then he says that when Allah is talking about creating with his own two hands, this is a symbolism for the power of Allah. Because Allah himself talks about that in the Quran. He says, وَأَيَّدَهُمْ بِنَصْرِهِ. أَيَّدَهُمْ is from the same word as yad in Arabic. Yad means hand. أَيَّدَهُمْ means to lend them a hand, to give them a hand, literally. Right? But it's clear that when Allah is helping the Muslim armies gain victory, he's not like coming physically and giving them a hand. He's metaphorically aiding them and assisting them. So the Imam alayhi salam then goes on to explain further, and then he switches the topic to talk about who are the people of the possessors of the pure intellect. Why? Because he sees that Yunus now understands how these people are deviated, but now he knows that Yunus wants to learn how to become the person who's not going to be deviated. How do I remain somebody who has that pure intellect? So what I want to just end the speech with here is this observation. Okay, and I want you, you know, when we're talking about like intellect, right, it's important for us to be thinking, right? So if you put on your thinking cap and you ask yourself that, what was the error of the companions of Malik? Was their logic wrong? Right, and you ask yourself, you'd be like, okay, well, Quran says that Allah has a face. Right, and a face is like this. This is a face. That's a face. Therefore, Allah has a face. The Quran says that Allah has hands, and da 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 da. So Allah has hands. Right? It makes a kind of logical sort of sense. Right? If you look at the kind of just the form of it, the form of the logic is something which you could perhaps justify. But what's wrong here is not the form of the logic. Right? It's that they're sights were set so short and so shallow that they couldn't go beyond the literal meaning of the Quran into something deeper. So all they're operating is in that limited mindset, and the conclusions they're deriving are therefore very, very limited. And the Imam alayhi salam comes and opens up a way of thinking about it which just, you know, they couldn't even fathom. That what Allah is intending here is for you to be directed to the people who are mirrors of Allah's perfection and beauty. Right? It's something which is very beautiful, and it's a huge, powerful example for us, because sometimes we might be doing the same thing. We analyze things, we come to conclusions, but we do so with limited scope. Right? We're not considering different dimensions of that will open up the way of our thinking. I'll give you a couple of examples. This is based on, you know, real conversation that I have with people. Let's say that somebody has a grudge against somebody else. Okay, maybe, for example, there's a child who, whatever, they had a strained relationship with their parent. And when they're older, they still have something in their heart about the way that they felt they were mistreated by that parent. Okay? Now, sometimes, you see the logic that's here. What do? They say that, okay, I'm unhappy with the way that my parent treated me, and I know that my parent wanted me to do X, Y, Z. They were really keen on my being a practicing Muslim. They were really keen on my practicing in this way. But I want to get back at them. I want to show that I'm not happy with the way they treated me. So what am I going to do? Right? In spite of what they did to me, I'm going to rebel. I'm not going to do what they want me to do. And take that, right? And it's completely justified, right? It's something which logically they're, you know, they've figured it out, and it's something that they're acting upon. Okay, and if we look at it, say that, okay, that person is feeling this revenge and they want to... Now, what the parent did, right, is not right, right? A child should never grow up with that type of feeling against their parents. The parents should have taken a different approach when they wanted to guide their children. But let's say it happened. Now, that child has grown up, and now they're adults and they're thinking about it, and they have this type of logic, right? We go to them and say, look at, right, you might have this types of feelings, but can you, for a minute, analyze your own logic? And ask yourself this question, that whom are you really hurting here? Who is the person who's suffering through your choices?
Is it your parent or is it yourself? Right? Everything that your parent was encouraging you to do, it wasn't for their own benefit, right? After all, they wanted something good for you. Now, maybe their method wasn't the best method. Maybe sometimes even the stuff they wanted from you wasn't right. But now, right, you have to look at it objectively and say, is this something which actually was good or not? You know, sometimes we think, we have this tendency, human tendency, where we say that when we don't like someone, then them and everything about them becomes bad. Right? And when we like something, them and everything about them is good. But that's not the case. Sometimes there can be somebody who might have, let's say, the worst of akhlaq, the worst of this, right? But they're very good at one thing. Maybe they're very generous, right? Fir'aun, in the Quran, Fir'aun was a tyrant. He was a XYZ. He was this, he was that. He fought the Prophet. He did all these things, right? But he was known to be a generous person. So do we say that, okay, because Fir'aun was generous and we don't like Fir'aun, therefore we don't like generosity as well? Obviously not. Right? So this type of logic is very short-sighted. Right? I need to be thinking that if I really want to settle things with them, maybe I need to have a conversation with them. And say that, you know, mom, you know, dad, like, you know, that I just wanted to let you know that these some things are in my heart. And sometimes just by telling them, it can just heal, do so much healing. Another case, I might say that, you know what? I'm going to take my complaint to Allah, right? I'm going to pour out my heart to Him. And it's amazing how that 5-minute conversation can have such an impact in healing our hearts. And we can come out of that feeling like new people. So this is just one example of how not having a proper way of analyzing things can lead to our making bad decisions. You saw how the Imam alayhi salam was telling Yunus that these people are like this and like that, and he showed them a different way of thinking things, and that's something that we can look at as well for ourselves. Again, this is the month of Quran, and our topic is Ulul Albab, the possessors of pure intellect. Inshallah, with the help of Allah Ta'ala, in the future nights, we'll look at some of the characteristics of the people of the intellect and how to achieve them. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin. السلام عليك يا رسول الله السلام عليك يا أمير المؤمنين علي بن أبي طالب السلام عليك يا فاطمة الزهراء سيدة نساء العالمين السلام عليك يا حسن المجتبى السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين وعلى 9 المعصومين من ذرية الحسين السلام عليك يا مولانا يا صاحب العصر والزمان عجل الله تعالى فرجك وجعلنا من أعوانك وأنصارك ورحمة الله وبركاته